Hey, welcome back to season 4 of the FASD Family Life Podcast, the show for families by families raising children and youth with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. I am your host, Robbie Seal. I am an FASD educator, advocate, and mom of 5 incredible people, including 3 teens diagnosed with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. If my 30 years of parenting has taught me anything, it's that the struggle is real, and so is success. This episode is being released on September 30th. In Canada, that is National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. On this day, we wear orange shirts to honor the children whose lives were stolen when they were taken away to Indian residential schools sponsored by the government. These schools started in 1883 and lasted all the way to 1996. We wear the orange shirts to represent the clothes that were taken from the children, stripped down and made to wear uniforms and have their culture stripped away and their language stripped away. And thousands of them never returned to their families. They died of tuberculosis and disease and abuse in those schools. So today we honor them. If you want to know more about the Truth and Reconciliation and Orange Shirt Day, there are links in the show notes. I wonder, did you have a chance to catch last week's episode featuring the ever-inspiring Lauren Richardson? She was here to talk with me about her advocacy work as an individual with FASD and her dream to open a center for FASD in her community. The center would provide FASD training, support, resource connections, and a place of belonging for individuals with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder and their families. You can support Lauren's dream by donating to her GoFundMe page, and there's a link in the show notes. I also want to encourage you to subscribe now so you never miss another episode. Well, many of my listeners have written to me and asked me to talk about the many health issues faced by our loved ones with FASD. Well, you've asked and I'm delivering. I met with 3 experts who will join me on the episode today to tackle the important conversation about comorbid physical and mental health issues that often present alongside fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. My guests on this episode are Miles Himmelreich, Emily Hargrove, and CJ Lutke. Each one has firsthand experience with this reality. Each of my guests has a diagnosis of FASD, as well as a long list of medical diagnoses and challenges as a result of prenatal alcohol exposure. These folks are full of joy, enthusiasm, and a zest for life. You're not going to want to miss this conversation. Miles, CJ, and Emily are also members of the Adult Leadership Committee of the FASD Changemakers. They are the lead researchers and authors of The Lay of the Land, Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder, a Whole Body Diagnosis Study. I first heard about the study in 2017 while attending a conference, and I was gobsmacked by what I learned. I'm so proud to have these folks on the show with me today. I encourage you to settle in with a nice hot cup of coffee, a notebook, and join us as we discuss their groundbreaking research that led to the discovery of 428 comorbid conditions common with FASD. They're proud to tell us that The Lay of the Land, Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder as a Whole Body Diagnosis Study was published in the Routledge Handbook for Social Workers and Addictive Behavior. To learn more about that publication, you can check the show notes as well. These people are change makers. These are the members, some of the members of the Adult Leadership Committee of the FASD Changemakers. They are located in British Columbia, Canada, and they join me today. And I am so friggin' excited to have you guys here. I have 3 members. They will each introduce themselves, talk about the survey and their experiences. And now I turn it over to them.
Well, thank you. So my name is Miles Himmelreich. I will share a little bit about myself, and then I will pass it on to my colleagues to introduce themselves as well. So I have been working in the field of FASD as a mentor, as well as a advocate and running self-advocating groups for individuals with FASD, as well as also consulting on a number of different projects for approximately 25 to 30 years. But as an individual who has FASD, I often like to joke that I've been in the profession of FASD for 44 years.
Fair enough. I think you got a PhD in lived experience.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Got all the letters behind me. Yep. So, yeah. So it's been an amazing experience. I always like to say that once I understood, made sense, and became accepting of my diagnosis, that's where I understood, made sense, and became accepting of myself. I had the opportunity to start attending conferences in Vancouver and being a part of those a number of years ago. And one of the greatest things about it was that there was a number of other individuals with FASD attending the conference. And it was so amazing to be able to be with and around other individuals, because that's where you started to kind of feel those things where you're like, oh my goodness, I'm not the only one, right? And you could connect with other individuals, and you felt like, and for a lot of people, many times it was the first time you actually felt like, oh my goodness, I fit in here, right? And so that was amazing. So originally, probably about 5-6 years ago now, myself and I would say there was 7 or 8 other individuals, we were having dinner together after the conference one evening, and it was all individuals with FASD, just spending some time together. And I shared that I was at that time getting ready to go in for hernia surgery in the next couple of weeks. And someone else at the table said, oh, I've had that. And someone else said, oh, I've had it twice. And so then we started to talk a little bit about, oh, you know, I also have arthritis. And someone else like, me too, I have this, I have that. And as we started to share kind of our health issues, it was interesting because there was a lot of us that had similar health issues. But what also was interesting was that I believe I was probably one, if not the oldest, at the table. And so I was in my late 30s at that time. And so it was interesting to hear these health issues and having individuals in their 20s talk about these things. So we, a few of us got together, myself, CJ, and Emily, and we connected with Jan Lutke, who helps coordinate the Vancouver conference and has been working in the field for years and is kind of like our Yoda, I guess we could say. So we collaborated with her and said, well, let's just start seeing if there's something here with FASD and the health issues. And so we started to put together kind of a list of some of our own personal health issues, right? And so as we did that, we started to kind of find out again that there was a number of health issues just between the three of us, myself, Emily, and CJ, and then started realizing as we were putting this survey out how much we found that a lot of other individuals were experiencing these health issues too. So just to give you some of like the kind of numbers and demographics of the survey, so we ended up asking something like over 260 questions in 25 different areas of health, right? And so we'll share some of those areas of health with you today and just share some of those stats. And we had, we used 541 responses from individuals from all over the world diagnosed with FASD. They provided their clinic and their actual diagnosis. So we're able to use it as a professional diagnosis with these health issues that they talked about. But the really interesting thing, and we would continue to go back to this many times, was that the average age of people that filled out the survey was 27 and a half years of age. And then what we started realizing was, you know, and as we talked about today, you'll see how some of these things that we talked about aren't things that you would think a 22-year-old would be experiencing, or something that, you know, a 19-year-old would be experiencing, right? And so it was interesting to see that the average age, 27 and a half years, and then the health issues that we were actually speaking about was quite interesting. One of the things that we wanted to do with this survey was to be able to help people understand that FASD is a whole body diagnosis, that it affects, you know, the development of the bones, the tissues, the joints, all of those things. We always talk about how the brain is affected, but we also need to understand how the body itself is affected, right? And so what we found as we were doing this was how much the body was impacted and how much it was impacted at such a young age, right? And again, that's something that we don't hear or talk about. And so that's led to many of us not being supported in the healthcare system because we're not believed, because, oh, you're too young, or, you know, no, it's just growing pains, or for many of us, it was our normal, right? And so we didn't know to go, oh, not everybody has sore hips since they were 5 years old. What? So I think that was one of the really important things that we kind of found out from this, was that for many of us, these were things that we've experienced our whole lives, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass it on to CJ to introduce herself, share a little bit about what she does in the field, and then I'll ask her to pass it on to Emily to do the same. And then Emily, if you want to pass it back on to me, I'll start by reading my health list after that. Okay. So cool. CJ.
Hi, I'm CJ. I'm 38 years old. I have been in the field of FAS for a very long time, so long that I don't remember. I write a blog for NoFAS Australia. I just actually put two more out. I'm a mum of a little boy, 9. I actually adopted him. I'm also an advocate and a mentor, and I help on advising on different projects, including the University of Rochester. We're doing a health app, which is really, really exciting because I could really, really use it, and I know a lot of other people can. I think that covers it. Maybe, hopefully, I'm going to pass it over to Emily because I really don't like, I hate talking about myself. Okay, so Emily.
I'm not sure I'm any better at talking about myself, CJ. First things first, I got to call out the fact that I'm actually under the weather right now. So if I sound sniffy and nasally, yes, thank you, weather changes. And pollen, because the pollen count in, I live in Kentucky, by the way. So the pollen count here is quite high and is affecting all of us. So excuse my sniffles here and there. But my name is Emily Hargrove. And like I said, I live in the United States. And so I've been involved in the FASD world since 2008. So I want to say that's what, 14 years or so. So a little bit. And I currently, like CJ was saying, she's a mom. I'm a mom as well. My baby boy, he'll be 9 months old tomorrow, which is crazy. So I'll get to do that 9 months in, 9 months out picture. Excited to do that. And of course, living the mom life. I'm also living the student life. I'm a PhD student in psychology. You know, most of us definitely get told, hey, you're going to struggle in school. You're not going to make it very far. That's what the doctors told me anyway. And I said, nah, I'm not going to be that statistic. So I decided I'm going to study the very thing I've been diagnosed with. So I'm studying fetal alcohol spectrum disorders. I was diagnosed with FAS at 1. So, you know, besides mom life, student life, and being involved in the FASD world, my husband and I are student pastors as well. So we get to just light the fire within the next generation and see them become passionate about their purpose in life. So that's exciting to witness. But, you know, like Miles and CJ, there's so many different organizations and projects that I'm involved with and been involved with over these years, probably too many to name during this podcast. So suffice it to say, we have been around and have been involved in a lot, heard a lot, seen a lot, done a lot.
Okay, I'm here to say, oh my gosh. Like, I knew you guys were impressive, but come on. Like, amazing, amazing. Like, I don't even know where to start with. You're all parents. You're all advocates. I know Miles is a dad. He loves that little girl. CJ's got a boy. Emily, boy or girl? I missed it.
Boy, yes.
Boy. Amazing. You're all parents. And like when we're down in the muck, when we're still parenting ours, we're like, oh my God, they could never be parents. But you know what? Not what 9, 10-year-old, 12-year-old could be, but that's what we're seeing at the time. Right. And if you all cast your eyes back to, or your mind back to what you were like at 12, you're like, oh my God, I could have never been a parent either. Who could? Look at you now.
I think look people are actively willing me not to breed.
Well, so am I. So am I. I'm like, here's the birth control. Could we have a conversation about a vasectomy? Could we have the freaking conversation? Because
to be fair, I didn't breed. I outsourced.
I know you did. I know you did. But I mean, what it looks like right now and what it looks like when you're 30, very different things.
Yes.
Very different. But me too. Like, who was I at 12 or 13? Who was I at 30? Who am I at 50? Different, different, different. Anyway. Okay. That's just sorry. The unprofessional mom brain going, oh my gosh. Like, I've got tears. My heart's going like huge for all of you. Wow. PhD student, researcher, advocate, public speaker, parents. I'm so friggin' impressed. I'm so impressed. Thank you so much for all you've done, for all your teaching, all your advocacy. I sit now silently at your feet as you teach me.
Thank you. Yes, I did totally forget to mention that. Yes, I am a father of a beautiful 4-year-old girl. And I noticed that all three of us also forgot to mention that we're a part of the ALC.
The whole reason why you're here, because you're part of the yes, ALC, the Adult Leadership yes, Committee of the FASD Changemakers.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Take it away, Miles. Let me hear. So now we're going to hear. Now, can I just say before I turn it over to you mm-hmm, that I heard about this survey, I think it's 5 years ago, in 2017 at the mm-hmm, International Conference in Calgary. I was there as a parent, but also I got to present on a side thing at the conference, and I did my shtick, The Struggle is Real and So is Success. But I heard you guys present about the health survey. My mouth fell open. My mouth fell open and my tears started to roll because I'm thinking about the health conditions you've all gone through. But as a parent of 4 prenatally exposed to alcohol, the health conditions you were talking about, I'm like, these aren't statistics. These are my babies. Mm-hmm. These are my babies. And we all need to pay attention. And I've had the very experiences you have of taking my kids to maybe the ER or to the doctor and saying, they're complaining of this. And they ask what pre-existing health conditions. And I say FASD and the doctor doesn't write it down. The doctor mm-hmm, doesn't know what that means. So this is huge. Now, Miles, please take it away.
That's actually something that we talked about quite often is our own experiences of dealing with the healthcare system. And, you know, we'll share a little bit about the quality of life survey, which was the second one that we just released through the ALC, and how even that lack of support in the healthcare system plays a role in our quality of life, right? Where we're not believed, where it's not written down, where it's just dismissed as, oh, that means that you're not good at math. That has nothing to do with your sore knees, right? Where in actuality, it does. So I'm going to share with you my list of health issues, and then I'll pass it on. So I have
a feeling it's like a scroll. I'm imagining like you've got this rolled up piece of paper and you're like, whoosh, and it's a scroll.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Hey, okay. I'm standing by.
It is. Yeah. I was diagnosed with, at the time, FAE, partial FAS. At birth, I weighed 4 pounds, 15 ounces, and that was full term. I have microcephaly. I don't know. I probably won't say these words correctly, but high arched palate, bifid uvula, heart murmur, micronatia, retronatia, flat feet, hip dysplasia, scoliosis, prominent sternocleidomastoid hypermobility of joints, bowed knees, capdactyly, brachydactyly, arthritis in ankles, knees, and hips, degenerative disc disease in my neck, bone spurs in elbows, plantar fasciitis, general muscle weakness, ocular weakness in the right eye, myotopia, bilateral perforated eardrums, chronic ear infections, deafness, right intention tremor, malleolar flattening, lymphomas, hernia, sleep disorder, hypoglycemia, sensory disorder. And as I've been getting older, a lot of these things have actually been getting worse. I do have, I have to go for surgery because of the perforated eardrums and the holes in my ears. And then the hip dysplasia and the arthritis has been getting quite a bit worse over the years. But again, as we said, for me, a lot of these things I actually had when I was 12, 13 years old. But you don't look at a 12 or 13 year old for hip dysplasia or osteoarthritis, right? So I'm going to pass it on to CJ to share her list of health issues, which who knows, may have grown even overnight, right? So CJ.
Okay. So I was diagnosed with full FAS at birth. I weighed 2 pounds and 9 ounces. I was full term. There was the amniotic fluid was full of alcohol, and it equals a very low birth weight, below 1,200 grams. I was in the ICU for 6 months, or the NICU, I'm sorry. I have microcephaly. I had seizures as a baby. I had a bilateral rotation deformities of both feet. Femurs, and it was repaired at age 11, which means the femurs were actually formed backwards. And so when I was 11, they broke them, turned them around, and pinned and plated them. I have, and it's very rare. It's found in what, in less than 1 in 20 of 1% of the population. I have micronathia, microophthalmia or ophthalmia. It means small eyes. I have myopia. I have phalangeal tapering in all fingers in both hands, which means my the bones of my fingers get tinier and tinier. I'm short.
How tall are you?
I don't know if that's a medical issue unless I reach for something and it drops on me.
It's a life issue. How tall are you?
I am 5'1".
Oh, well, so I'm 5'2". I'm right there with you. But can I just stop you for a second?
Yeah.
You blew my mind. Full term. Under 3 pounds?
Yeah. Yeah. The doctors,
They had no hope, did they? They had no hope, did they?
No, no. The doctors were, my mom actually met one of the doctors that performed the surgery on me to save my life twice. They took most of my intestines out, and then they missed some. They took some more out. And then when I was 30, my intestines decided to throw a temper tantrum and I had to get more out.
Yeah, we talked about that before. Yeah.
Yeah. But the doctor didn't think I would make it. They thought that I would be a vegetable. They thought I wouldn't walk, talk. I wouldn't make anything of myself. And I did. If I did, it wouldn't be very much. So you know what? A lot's changed in the last 30, 40 years. And I'm very happy about that. I have a low weight height. I'm 100 pounds, I guess. I don't know if that's low weight. Umbilical hernias, I had multiple. I have a high arched palate. I'm missing 8 adult teeth. They just never appeared. So that's why I didn't need orthodontia, which my mom was grateful for. I have hypoplastic tooth enamel. So it's not as strong as it should be, and it doesn't cover all of them. I have flat feet. I have abnormal palmar creases. So I have hockey stick creases. I like to say it's because I'm Canadian. hockey's in our blood, or in our hands. I have chronic dislocating joints, my knees, my shoulders, my fingers, due to hypermobility of the joints. I have generalized low muscle tone, visual motor integration disorder. So, I mean, me and hand-eye coordination don't get along. We have what I like to say an uneasy alliance at most times. Hypertrophic scarring, which means I can't actually explain it, but it's, I didn't wear bikinis as a teen, but now I don't actually care. I'll wear a bikini and let everyone else be uncomfortable. I have a very high pain tolerance. So that's why, dislocations and a bilateral femoral rotation didn't really faze me. I have hypoglycemia. I have problems with temperature regulation. I just actually had a discussion with my mom. I was like, oh, you know what? The heat sucks until you don't feel it anymore and you're fine. And she goes, no, that's heat stroke. I'm like, oops. early osteoarthritis. My knee has this weird thing where it locks sometimes and it can't straighten and limp around a bit. I have chronic sinusitis, ear infections, chest infections. I had chronic pneumonia as a child. I used to get severe breathing problems just eating ice cream. I have short gut syndrome with several bowel restrictions due to obstruction. I have a continually very low iron and B12 levels despite treatment. I have sleep disorders and sensory issues. And yeah, that's it.
That's all, CJ. That's it.
That's all. What are you complaining about? That's nothing.
I know. Emily, over to you.
Okay, everybody can't see us, but we're all laughing. I did not insult her. We're all laughing. Yeah. All right, Emily, go.
I wanted to say that, and I know we're going to get into this, a little bit later about why this is so important, but one of the reasons why understanding these health conditions, besides my nasalness, is so important is that, we can tell people all day long until we're blue in the face that, oh yeah, I'm an FASD. Like you're saying, you're telling your kids' doctors, yes, they have an FASD. And cool. It doesn't mean anything, right? You don't look like you do, or it's just a brain-based childhood thing, big deal. But then they hear these things and they go, oh, this is real. Oh, something's going on here. And so that's why this is so important that we do read off these lists, because then it becomes real, becomes tangible, becomes something more than just what we've been talking about, this childhood brain-based thing. This is bigger than that, of course. So I was diagnosed with FAS at one. I was failure to thrive. And I wasn't that small when I was born. I weighed 6 pounds when I was born. But then when I was one, I weighed at my heaviest 11 pounds. So I wasn't gaining weight. And then when I was three, I looked like I was one. So I just, now that I'm 31, I look like I'm 20 something. So it stays with me. I don't gain weight. I have a hard time gaining. And even after I gave birth, I dropped it immediately and I'm already below my goal weight. Like I want to be heavier. I try, but it's difficult. And I have chronic ear infections, multiple sets of tubes in and out of my ears, severe scoliosis. To a therapist, my back looked like a racetrack, which is kind of cool to say, but not cool to live, right? I have herniated discs in my neck, chronic migraines. I have a headache, at least a headache, if not migraine, every single day. Supraventricular tachycardia, some undiagnosed heart conditions going on as well. I received a cancer diagnosis at 19, gluten intolerance, asthma. I completely forgot that I did have chronic pneumonia all the time. Like CJ was talking about, oh yeah, that's true. I had that too. Hypoglycemia. I had a tumor in my throat, which is separate than the other cancer diagnosis that was removed when I was 7 years old. I had pyogenic granuloma, which is really not that big of a deal, but it had to be removed as well. And I'm anemic, so constant low iron. I have chronic fatigue, which may or may not be related to the low iron. I also have these very odd raised bumps on my scalp that keep growing and multiplying, which really creeps out my hairdresser every time. She's like, "That, what is that?" I'm like, "I don't know. You figured that. I know." I have cysts on my kidneys, cysts on my ovaries, a hiatal hernia. I have growth hormone deficiency. And when I was younger, I had chemical seizures of the brain, which caused me to have auditory and visual hallucinations, which I grew out of. So we know that it wasn't schizophrenia. It was chemical seizures of the brain. I have a hearing deficiency. I have a difficulty staying asleep. And I mean, I wake up, goodness, probably every 20 to 30 minutes, almost every night. And like I said, there's probably a lot more than that, that my fascia tears away from my bones as well. So just like CJ and Miles were talking about, there's just too many to remember. And it's funny because CJ was talking about how she's like, "Oh, this happens." And her mom's like, "That's not normal." And I'm like, "Oh, see, that's with us. All of these things." I'm like, "Oh, that's right. That's not really how the body's supposed to operate, is it?"
But it's your everyday. So it's how your body operates. And I think like CJ made a comment about a high pain tolerance. And I wonder, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but I wonder, is that what it is? Or it's something you've lived with your whole life. And so your body doesn't know it's supposed to be different than that. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if all three of you live with chronic pain. You do. Of course you do.
Yeah.
And you're totally like sitting here laughing and smiling and carrying on with your life. Like friggin' superheroes, like you're living with pain and exhaustion and ear infections. Like an ear infection will like, that'll lay out any adult. That's a lot of pain, excruciating pain. You're like, yeah, you know, whatever. That's just how we roll, you know, and tubes in your ears. And like, it's extraordinary. You know what I've come to, a picture I've kind of come to think about as an individual who has FASD, be it my children, other children, you guys, adults, because I mean, we might talk about children who have FASD because I talk to parents all the time, but like that's 20 years. You guys live your whole life. This is not a childhood disease. This is a person's whole friggin' life. And it's like, you have all these challenges. You've got this mountain to climb every day and you get to do it with a backpack full of rocks. And low oxygen because this is the body you've been given. And so that you get out of bed in the day and you get anything done, a standing ovation. Like, and with the days you can't, of course not. Of course not.
Thank you.
I'm a mom and I'm just like, I'm so glad I heard you guys 5 years ago because that really helped me. And the more I listen to you guys, and others of FASD, the more understanding I have and the more I can go, wow, you know, and to those people who have FASD and maybe can't work, mm-hmm. Of course not. Of course not. Let us be compassionate. Right? Anyway, you guys are amazing.
That means a great deal to us to be recognized for the effort we put in, because a lot of times when we can't, there's an association to laziness, and yep. it's complete exhaustion.
Yep.
A couple of days ago, I made the bed, I did the laundry, I fell asleep.
Yep.
I couldn't lift my arms.
And how many, and I know too, okay, in addition to this study, we know that Dr. Jackie Pye, and I know you guys all know her, Dr. Jacqueline Pye at the University of Alberta. I mean, she did this study out about like toward healthy outcomes and stuff, but she also talked about some of the other complexities. And she didn't, in this particular talk I heard, she didn't talk so much about the physical, but she also said over 90% of people who have FASD also have mental health challenges. Mm-hmm. You guys didn't even list that, and you don't have to, but I could think about like ADHD, anxiety, depression. And then I don't even know what else, but I know we have those in my house, and that'll knock you out. Any of those will knock you out for a day. And then chronic sleep. You all talked about sleep disorders. Nobody can function without sleep. You guys are amazing. Okay, Miles, take it away.
Thank you. I love your analogy of the backpack, because as you were sharing that, I totally pictured it. And I think if you think about, say, even taking the three of us here, CJ, Emily, and myself, and you take three or four other individuals without FASD, and we're all going up this mountain together with our backpacks on. If we start the hike and our backpacks weigh 40 pounds and everybody starts going, we are never told that the other people's backpacks only weigh 10 pounds, but we're expected to keep up with them. We're expected to have the same results as them. And then if we were to say, oh, I'm tired after 5 feet, we're looked at as lazy and that we're complaining. And then we also think, okay, well, I guess everybody's backpack feels like this, because again, nobody's told us and said, did you know your backpack is like 30, 40 times heavier than everyone else's? No wonder it's hard to carry. No wonder you get tired easy. You know, it's okay to take a break. We're never told that, right? And so there's that whole part of like, well, I'm told that I just have to deal with this. And then there's the other part of, this is how heavy my backpack's been my whole life, so this must be normal for everybody, right? And so that was one of the really interesting things about with this survey, was finding out how for us it was our normal, but then also getting to the realization that this is not normal. Right? These things are not normal, and that we are experiencing, you know, these health issues at a younger age, but we're also experiencing them in a more impactful way, right? So what we ended up doing was taking these health issues that we talked about, and we said, so do you have this? Do you have this? And then when the individual who filled out the survey said, yes, I have this, we took those numbers and results and compared them to general population. And what we end up finding out from over the 260 questions we asked, individuals with FASD were anywhere from 2 times to over 140 times higher to experience health issues than general population. So even if it's 2 times, you know, so that's saying individuals with FASD experience this 2 times more than general population, 5 times more, 10 times more. People are going to be like, oh my goodness, that's a lot. But some of these, and you know, we'll start to share them now, you'll see, like for here, one of the ones we did was hearing. And so we asked about chronic ear infections and in adults. And so for chronic ear infections in adults, it was 147 times higher for individuals with FASD than general population. That's massive, 147 times higher, right? And then we asked about hearing loss after the age of 20, and it happens in, we found again another high rate of individuals with FASD, but also too, again, this is where, And I know for myself, now that I've got hearing aids, and I just got them in the last 4 or 5 years, something like that, I thought I always talked at this certain volume. And it would be so frustrating because constantly people are like, what? What? And I'm like, oh my goodness. But it wasn't until I got my hearing aids that I realized the volume that I talk at was very, very low, right? So again, that's that perfect example of that's always been my normal. I didn't know that I was deaf and to that extreme, right? And so, you know, that was something that, you know, we all talked about our tubes in our ears and all that. And that's something, again, that we all quite often, I would say almost everybody that we talk with FASD has experienced some form of struggles with their hearing. We asked, hearing loss in children with FASD is over 14% more than general population. And in 1/3 of the 1% in kids without FASD, so it was over 58 times higher for hearing loss in children with FASD compared to general population stats. I'm going to pass it over to CJ. CJ, do you want to tell a little bit about the publication of the survey and then share a little bit of one of your health areas?
Yeah. We were published in the Routledge Handbook of Social Work and Something Behaviors. I was so focused on getting all the notes correct, I forgot what the book was called. But I know it's Routledge. And it was published in 2020, you know, that year that everybody just loves. Nothing bad happens ever in 2020. One of the health issues that they have in one of the health issues that I'd like to talk about that's in the Routledge of, the Handbook for Social Work and Addictive Behaviors. That's it. Is the autoimmune disorders. There were about 80 autoimmune disorders that exist, but we only asked about 10. And, out of the 80, only 5 to 8% of the general population, so people not with FAS, has one. But the 10 we asked about, 35% of adults had one of the 10. And that's a rate of 4 times higher than for the general population of 80 autoimmune disorders combined. The ones we asked about were lupus, sarcoidosis, angioedema, celiac disease, psoriasis, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, fibromyalgia, Kawasaki's disease, and rheumatoid arthritis. The reason we asked about these specific 10 is because we all knew somebody who had them. The stats on those are the ones with the highest individual rates are sarcoidosis is 16 times higher. Angioedema is 12 times higher. Lupus is 6.9 times higher. So when you go in and you're complaining about fatigue and muscle ache, and when you have a high pain tolerance and you're complaining about muscle aches and you don't get believed, it sets you back. So rheumatoid arthritis was 5.4 times higher. Fibromyalgia was 4.9. Crohn's disease was 3.5 times higher. Celiac disease, this is actually was already medically known and is the accepted rate of FAS, is 2.8 times higher. Ulcerative colitis was 2.7 times higher. Psoriasis was 2.5 times higher. Kawasaki's disease was 0.9 times higher. There were also several more autoimmune disorders and diseases that were reported on, like Sjogren's syndrome, scleroderma, anti-GBM or antibody disease known as Good Pasture syndrome. And these are rare to exceedingly rare. Yeah. I'm going to pass it on to Emily.
No, I think it's crazy. And I think something that kept popping up in the survey data was how rare so many of these conditions were. And whether that be, you know, like she's talking about autoimmune diseases, but whether that be with our heart, with our hearing, or it's rare. And I know that when we were presenting some of this data before, we would talk about how we shouldn't see this, you know, in a room full of people that are unaffected by alcohol, yet we're seeing it over and over and over again amongst our friends that are affected with prenatal exposure to alcohol. And again, this goes back to show how real this is and how something is happening. We might not fully understand the genetics or the epigenetics behind what's causing some of these things, but that's what we're asking. We're asking researchers to take this information and say, okay, let's better understand what is going on here. And I think something else that keeps coming up, no matter what category we talk about, is how, okay, are we seeing this? And again, this was the average age of the respondent was 27.5 years of age. And a lot of these things shouldn't happen until you're like 50 or older. And so half of that age is crazy. So is this happening at much younger ages because our bodies are aging faster? Are these diseases or diagnoses, are they progressing faster because of the prenatal exposure to alcohol? Or are we seeing it more frequently because of, or is it a combination of the both? I don't know. But when it comes to heart conditions, for example, and that's a huge one, because if they're having, if they're having surgeries as a child, then what does that mean as an adult? And just a couple of those things, heart surgery was 2.7% of the respondents. So that's 10 times higher than the general population.
Wait a minute. Did you just say heart surgery is 2.7 times higher?
It's 10 times higher. 10 times higher, but reported at 2.7% reported that they had heart surgeries as a child. 10 times higher. 10 times higher. And then for me, I have the SVTs, and that's just one of the heart conditions that I have. So my heart rate, I had to wear a heart monitor for about a week when I was in high school because I'd either pass out, I could feel the flushing up my neck, I could feel all of these sensations. I didn't quite fully understand what was happening. And so finally my mom's like, no, we're going to go get this checked out. And at rest, my heart rate was 180 beats a minute.
That's like stroke zone, 180.
Not normal at all. So something was going on. And of course they say take beta blockers, and I'm thinking beta blockers make you more tired. I'm already tired enough. So what can you do? Right. And if you think about it, a lot of the respondents were saying that, well, yeah, I've had all of these kinds of arrhythmias, but I just thought they'd go away. Or they said, oh, I didn't think it was important, or I didn't report it to the doctor because I forgot that it was happening. So how many of the respondents actually have arrhythmias or problems with their heart and they don't even have a diagnosis because, like I said, they said, oh, I forgot, or I didn't think it was important. Or like we keep saying, this has felt normal to me because I didn't know my heart wasn't supposed to feel this way. Yeah, definitely. Definitely interesting.
Interesting. Did you have more that you wanted to share there, Emily? I'm sorry that I interrupted you. I was just so shocked. My mouth fell wide open.
Oh, no. I mean, I definitely could. Here's the thing. We could go on and on and on about all of these categories, but just again, just reiterating the fact that something is going on and this is real. This isn't imagined. This isn't in our heads. This is not going away. And in fact, like Miles was talking about, as he gets older, these conditions get worse. So I reiterate that question. Is it progressing faster within our population? I don't know.
One of the other, I've got like 8 questions in my head at one time and I can't sort them out. Can you guys relate to that? Yes. I remember years ago, like my son, he's very athletic. He's very active. He doesn't stop until he's like made to stop at bedtime. And then all of a sudden my legs hurt, my feet hurt. He hasn't told me all day that his legs hurt, his feet hurt. And I'm like, you're pulling stunts, right? You just want more attention and blah, 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 blah. Because all of us parents do that kind of stuff. But then I heard you guys in your survey 5 years ago. And now when he says his legs hurt, his feet hurt, I'm like, is this a thing? I'm feeling like I should get on the phone with Miles and go, Miles, is this a thing? Like, this is what he's very athletic. And I know you were too. And he does all kinds of stupid stuff because he's 14. And I know you did too. So, because I heard your stories by jumping your bike over your friends and just doing all kinds of nonsense or letting them jump over you, you know, what could go wrong? Because, you know, FASD, any idea is a good idea. So, but he's got like, when he stops, it's like, oh, my legs. Or when he wakes up in the morning, oh, my legs. And like him, he's so athletic, but coming down the stairs, it's like his ankles are an old man.
Yeah.
So stiff and sore. And I'm like, I think there's a thing here. I think there's a thing. And I think we better go talk to somebody about a thing.
Yeah.
And 4 of my kids who've been prenatally exposed have heart murmurs. Like, how's that for stats, right? They're innocent murmurs. They're not a problem, but that's rare. 2 of my 4.
I used to get shin splints as a child. I didn't know they were shin splints. I didn't know anything.
Well, how do we know how to describe it when we're a kid? How do we know?
My legs hurt. And I didn't know that's what they were. I just, you know, like your son, I wasn't as coordinated, I'm guessing, as he is. But I was always running around. I was always, and at the end of the day, my shins felt like somebody was just hitting them over and over and over again. And it wasn't until adult, and I explained it to somebody just casually, and they're like, that's a shin splint. I'm like, oh, no, it's not. What is it? So it could be that.
Well, I mean, there's lots of things probably, right? And I got to just get him checked out. Maybe talk to we have a really great pediatrician, so talk to her. But maybe I need to take him to a foot clinic or an orthopedic somebody or other, or a physiotherapist. I don't know, but I got to get after it because he's like super active, but he's also in a fair bit of pain. And Emily, you talked about headaches. And, you know, when my girls have headaches a lot of the time, like after school, they'll have a headache and they'll talk about it at school too. And in a recent psychological assessment, because we're getting ready to transition to adult services, we needed a capacity assessment and all this. And it was interesting. The teacher checked off, like, do they have somatic symptoms? So are they experiencing maybe stress or frustration, but it's coming out in body pains? And she's like, yes, highly. And I'm like, no, these aren't. Maybe it's somatic systems, but it's also they have FASD, they have pain, they have fatigue. Like, you know, the teacher said somatic symptoms. I'm thinking they're overwhelmed, they're exhausted, their body's hurt. This is why they have headaches. And you're like, yeah, yeah. When you guys presented 5 years ago at the conference, you said the rate of early onset dementia was astronomically high and my gut dropped. Can you guys talk about that?
Yeah, I actually was just going to share that one. So one of the categories we did was other health issues. So a couple of them were things like cleft palate was 26 times higher for individuals with FASD. Cerebral palsy is over 12 times higher, and seizures at least 20 times higher. And then early onset dementia. So early onset dementia is defined as the age of 64, right? We had individuals, I believe, in their 30s reporting having early onset dementia, and the number that reported having this made it 209 times higher for early onset dementia in individuals with FASD compared to general population. So 209 times higher and experiencing it at a younger rate, right? So it's, you know, and we've talked about this and we've shared it before when we do the full health survey slides and everything about how, you know, we talk about the brain development and how that might be going at a slower pace, right? But then when it comes to the body, it's almost like our body breaks down at a faster pace, right? And so, again, continually struggling with these things and then trying to get the help and support, but then also, again, knowing to ask for that help and support and knowing that your body's tired and that's okay and it should be, right? Because it's been our normal, right? So,
and thinking about that, backpack analogy, you're going through everyday life with challenges, whether you're climbing a hill or a mountain or going down a hill, whatever the heck is going on, but you're carrying a backpack that's got 40 pounds. I'd suggest probably 80 pounds, you know, like it's substantial and you carry that every day. And then you go to bed with it at night because you're in pain and maybe your mind can't stop and maybe your ears hurt. I've had one ear infection as an adult and it was cringy. It was so painful. I couldn't. Like, it was so painful. It stopped everything. And you're like, yeah, that's what we do. And then you can't sleep at night because FASD doesn't stop just because you lie down.
No. And that's what we, you know, quite often I'll say about how, you know, even with the sensory stuff and things like that, we talk about that during the day. And I believe CJ has a couple stats on the sensory, but there's no off switch. When I go to bed at night, I still have to deal with the way the pillow feels and the blanket feels and the detergent that was used and the fabric softener smell that was used, the breeze that's coming in from the window, the little noise here and there, all of those things I still have to deal with because when you go to bed at night, there's no off switch for your sensory issues. And when you have heightened sensory issues, all of these things actually become, you know, I always say, think of it as it being physically painful. The smells, they actually physically hurt. The way something tastes can actually physically be uncomfortable. So you deal with that the whole time while you're sleeping. So we don't actually sleep, but yet we're held to the same expectations as everyone else who has slept. And so we don't get to take that backpack off when we go to bed at night.
No.
So you're still wearing that backpack that weighs 40 pounds of rocks. How comfortable is that going to be? But you're supposed to just sleep like everybody else and then get up in the morning and be ready to go.
Come on, let's go. Let's go. Let's get after it. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if not, then you're lazy.
Yeah.
Right. And again, this is where FASD is looked at as, oh, it's bad behavior. Let's see what the behavior is. Assume right away that's bad behavior and then we'll jump to punishment. So it's you're lazy. And
if I have sore feet, which I do have every day, if I had sore feet, a backache, okay, I'm over 50. Okay, I've got that too. But I've got a sore feet, a backache, an ear infection, and I didn't sleep well. I promise you I'll have behaviors. And I have a typical brain, but I will have behaviors. I'll be cranky.
Yeah.
And I won't be tolerant. And my sensory issues, be they very minor, are going to push me over the edge, right? If I'm too hot, I can't think and I can't be nice. And over 50, that happens in flashes. And but I can't think and I can't be nice. But if I also haven't slept and my feet hurt and my back hurts and I have an ear infection, and you guys are like, that's every day. And that's only part of it. Like, I don't have a heart arrhythmia. I don't have this. I don't have that. I don't like, and I haven't had people my whole life telling me, what's wrong with you? You don't look like there's anything wrong with you. Try harder. Come on, stop being lazy. Get up, keep going, play hurt. You know what I mean? And sheesh, you guys are heroes.
When there is so much happening, it does. I mean, I guess it's our normal, so we have a set, but when things get tipped over one way or another, Miles has a great analogy about the glass being full. And so the glass spills. And it looks really, really bad. I mean, sometimes it looks like aggressive behavior. And I know that I have a sibling and, oh, they just stomp and curse the television or something, right? Just out of whatever.
Stomp your feet, slam the door, say, stop talking to me.
But it looks aggressive, but they wouldn't hurt anybody. Oh my goodness. Even the thought of hurting somebody would just send them to the corner in a shame spiral. But they're also poor deaf. So they're loud and they will just, you know, curse at whatever they're doing. And it looks like an angry person, but they're not. And it looks aggressive and it's not. And we get labeled, you know, really aggressive, really angry, really antisocial, almost sociopathic. But then on the other hand, every single one of us has, we will give you the shirt off our backs.
To your fault. Yes. Yeah.
And people will take advantage of that. And the people taking advantage have never once been called a sociopath. We're always at risk of being labeled.
There's CJ's mic drop. Boom.
You know, we're always at risk being labeled because of things that are not always out of our control, but just out of the reach sometimes. And people who are neurotypical will take advantage of us because we're so conditioned to think it's our fault. And nobody labels somebody who's going to take advantage of us all these other things.
We talked about that before, CJ, on the podcast. Okay. We talked about walking around with like a bullseye on your back.
Yeah.
Yeah. You talked about that before.
So like the behavior problems because of medical issues is just, it's very complex and I don't think you can take one lens to it. So I apologize for digressing.
No, that's good. Was there something else that you guys wanted to focus on before I ask you another question?
Emily, did you want to add something?
Well, I guess there's so many different areas that we could dive into, but I honestly just wanted to add another layer to this, and that's the chronic stress. And as we're developing, we talk about how alcohol changes our brain, changes our body, like we've been talking about, but it also increases the cortisol levels. It floods your brain with cortisol. And so if you think about how then for the rest of our lives, we have this threshold of stress, we're always in this chronic stress mode on top of these physical conditions. But then I have to ask the question, are these two intertwined? Are they related? Or is this chronic stress that our body is under, the flooding of cortisol, is it contributing to the physical conditions? Or like I'm talking about, you can't really separate the two, right?
Chicken and egg, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about how, and there's no comparison, but there is a comparison, not that I should bring PTSD into this, but if you think about how individuals with PTSD, they do receive that certain level of compassion, but then that level of understanding of, oh, we understand that the environment right now is difficult to handle, but then how it's contributing to different the physical components as well. I think we should consider that within the FASD population as well. What level of stress is contributing to what's going on around? And then, okay, at the end of the day, this is everything that has been going on. And so going back to CJ's, it looks like, yep, one thing, but there's so much more going on here.
Thank you to Miles and CJ and Emily for their time and their willingness to share so openly about their experiences, and also share with us the research that they did and the results of the study. And it is available for you in the show notes when you look at the link for the Routledge Handbook. Did you hear what Emily said? Understanding these health conditions is so important because that's when people stop and listen and it becomes real. It becomes more than just a brain thing, more than just a childhood thing. How about those stats? They're staggering, aren't they? Over 90% of people with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder will also experience mental health challenges and mood disorders as well. There's so many health and physical challenges and disabilities that people have. 26 times higher probability or prevalence of having a cleft palate, 12 times higher rate of cerebral palsy within an FASD population than in a neurotypical population, 209 times higher rate of early onset dementia among FASD, 10 times higher rate of heart surgery as opposed to the general population. So along with the cognitive struggles, the memory, the anxiety, the executive dysfunction, the affect regulation dysfunction that all happens in the brain, we have the chronic stress. Alcohol changes the brain, floods the brain with cortisol in utero, and changes the neurochemistry. Dr. Jared Brown often comes on the show and he talks about how prenatal alcohol exposure changes and damages the HPA axis, hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenal glands. That's also what we're talking about here. So if you're people that you love with FASD seem easily overwhelmed, easily stressed out, have a quick temper, these are some of the reasons why. It's not a character flaw. All goes back to prenatal alcohol exposure, which is why we need to get the message out, which is why Canada needs a national FASD strategy, why Canada needs labeling on all packaging for alcohol about the risks to the unborn, as well as the risks to consuming alcohol. It's also why we need support and training as caregivers, because research has shown that raising a child, an individual with FASD, is extraordinarily stressful, much more stressful than even raising children with other disabilities. And that's not to diminish that experience. It's extraordinarily hard. Perhaps FASD is harder because it's so misunderstood and there's so much stigma and there's so few supports. I do want you to be encouraged, though, that there is work happening, tremendous work happening around the world. And over the next few months, I'm going to bring to you some of the wonderful work that's happening across the world. I'm going to be speaking with folks in Australia, in New Zealand, Ireland, Scotland, in the US, across Canada, from the East Coast to the West Coast, and more as I uncover them, because it's important for us all to understand that fetal alcohol spectrum disorder is a global health issue. It's not relegated to one population, one socioeconomic group. No, FASD is a global health issue. Did you know that Ireland has the third or fourth highest rate of FASD in the world? I didn't know that either. And just now they're getting after it. They're beginning to understand the impact of prenatal alcohol exposure and challenging society's view of alcohol and educating people so that they understand that consuming alcohol has its risks, particularly for women who may become pregnant or who are pregnant. And so I commend my friends in Ireland for the work they're doing. Parents also need to be educated. You know, once you get a diagnosis of FASD, the work only begins there. And so often when we do receive that diagnosis, we're not given any training. And we need training because this is a complex diagnosis. We need training. If you're interested in some training that I'm offering, I've partnered with O'Shea's Brain Domain in Scotland. And together we've created a 6-week parenting program currently being offered by NEETS in the UK to foster carers. I've also partnered with Foster Talk in the UK to provide FASD parent training to their foster parents. An amazing support group in Sioux Lookout, Canada, that's in Northern Ontario, tiny remote place. They have an amazing support group there, and they've reached out to me to ask me to do some parent training there as well. Training is so important. The most protective factor for an individual with FASD is to have a stable placement. What that means is a highly trained, FASD-informed placement, a home, where they are loved and cared for by people who understand this disability, who take a very relational approach to parenting, who understand that the complex behavioral symptoms are just that, they're symptoms. And so we take a brain-based approach to creating solutions and reducing barriers so that our kids can really do well and improve the outcomes in childhood, adolescence, and even more importantly, across the lifespan. I look forward to talking with Dr. Jackie Pye again on the program as we explore what research is telling us about how do we create better outcomes? What are the structures necessary? What are the systems and what can families do? If you want to meet with other parents who are raising kids with FASD, you can subscribe to my online community. It's called the FASD Family Life Community. The subscription is only $20 a month. And when you subscribe, you'll be invited to join our monthly online support group on Microsoft Teams. Our support group is a fun, lively place to connect with other parents who really understand, judgment-free, and resource-rich. And you would be so welcome to join us. You can sign up today to be part of our next meeting. We meet on the second Tuesday of every month at 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Mountain Standard Time so that you can select the time that works best with your busy lifestyle. And I will have to say thank you for letting me come along with you today in whatever it is you're doing. If you're doing errands or walking the dog or driving the kids to school, whatever it is you're doing, thank you for letting me be in your ear and be with you here today. I know your time is precious. And until next week, remember, the struggle is real and so is success. I'll talk with you soon.